Hi, listeners. Patrick here, and I'm recording this just before we hit upload on the final Bloodstream episode of 2020. And I'm sticking it right at the top because I want to start our final episode of the year with a thank you to you, our loyal listeners. Creating and producing entertaining content that actually informs and empowers patients, families, and advocates has been my mission with Believe Limited for almost 10 years now. And on the Bloodstream podcast specifically, for the last 3.5. 2020 was a game changer for everyone, to say the least. And for our part, we could have shelled up, we could have done less, behaved with less innovation, less creativity, less commitment, but we didn't. Instead, we doubled and tripled down our efforts. In 2019, we produced 19 episodes of Bloodstream. Very proud of those. In 2020, we came in planning to release 24 episodes. Well, this is our 54th episode of the year. I am extremely proud of that, and of Amy and Greg and the whole behind-the-scenes team who have helped to make this happen. And I want to give Takeda a big heartfelt thank you for their founding and ongoing support of the Bloodstream podcast. Thank you, Takeda, for sharing this vision and supporting this necessary community resource. In a year with more turbulence and uncertainty than ever before, Bloodstream became more frequent, more consistent, and more reliable than ever. We produced multiple episodes on COVID, especially in those early days, and we've spoken to leaders from HFA, NHF, NOR, WFH, and other acronyms throughout the year on a wide variety of issues, from advocacy to safety to education and much more. We've brought you notable community voices such as Jeannie White-Ginder, Debbie De La Riva, Rich Pizzillo, Michelle Rice, Trevor Martin, Nicole Scappi, Luke Pembroke, Michael Bishop, Don Rodolini, and many others. We've presented interviews with Dr. Laura Fox, Dr. Michael Callahan, Dr. Michael Wong, Dr. Guy Young, Dr. Robert Sidonio, Dr. Doris Kwan, Dr. Cindy Bailey, Dr. Amar Zaidi, and many others. We've highlighted chronic pain issues on Bloodstream Media's The Pain Podcast, patient journey stories on Bloodstream's Journeys podcast, and gene therapy education on It's in the Genes podcast. And we just launched our trailer for Flow, our new podcast for women with bleeding disorders. And bloodstreammedia.com is where you can go to learn more about any of those. Importantly, as entertaining and enjoyable as we try to make this program for you, we've not shied away from talking about difficult or uncomfortable things as the need to do so has arisen. We've dedicated entire episodes of Bloodstream to, for example, amplifying critical voices in a conversation about racism and systemic violence's impact on patients of color receiving proper care. We've given time over to discussing genderized barriers that women in our community face. We've brought you community members who openly battle mental illness, and we've brought you the voices of survivors who have lost loved ones in this community to depression and suicide, which still so many are even afraid to talk about. But not us. Misery lives and thrives in the dark. So we try to shine light. Bloodstream has also highlighted when health and safety is called into question, whether it be reported flaws in a company's factor manufacturing process or a serious adverse event taking place in a clinical trial, as was the case most recently earlier this week, with the report of one patient in uniQure's phase 3 clinical trial for gene therapy developing liver cancer. This, a mere weeks after the Irish Times referred to patients in that same trial as having been given a, quote, functional cure. It was right there in the headline. The passionate request for more transparency and more vigorous analysis in gene therapy clinical trials that was articulated by WFH Vice President of Medical Dr. Glenn Pierce, Mark Skinner, Brian O'Mahony, and others who authored Gene Therapy to Cure Hemophilia is Robust Scientific Inquiry, the Missing Factor. That piece resonates loudly for me this week in light of this adverse event following just 2 weeks after publications are printing articles about a cure. For those who doubt the need for this bleeding disorders community in the future, the need for advocacy watchdogs and knowledgeable gadflies who keep the powerful and profitable in blood disorders accountable and who keep the policymakers, politicians, and staffers that we've developed relationships with over the decades focused on the needs of people with inherited blood disorders. If you don't think these things are important, frankly, I don't know what world you're living in, but if you're listening to this podcast, then chances are that you, like me, understand exactly why we need community and community advocates. Now, for those listening who are employees or representatives of pharmaceutical manufacturers or biotech companies or specialty pharmacies or any of the private interests in bleeding disorders who perhaps don't want more conversation around certain news that might be unpleasant for your company, news that, well, let's be honest, if circulated enough, could hurt the company's bottom line or their shareholders' quarterly earnings expectations. If you're a listener who fits into this category, then my final message of the cold open is for you. If you try to suppress or otherwise control the information, interviews, or stories featured on this community podcast, not only will I resist your efforts with everything in my power, but I will make it a point to publicly communicate about said efforts to control information. As someone whose factor sent hepatitis C into his system as a preteen, who lost his only brother to hemophilia-related bleeding, who's lost many close friends to liver disease, AIDS, suicide, or drug overdose, and who's seen the bulletins and communications from people in power at the onset of the contamination crisis, let me give you a fair warning. If you try to stop or unduly influence me so that I don't highlight the publicly available reports, data, and stories that aren't in your bottom line's best interest, I promise you, you will lose. I've taken on Kaiser Permanente and won. I've taken on the city of Boston, long story, and won. And I will not back down to those in power in this community, not with my history, not with our history, and not with everything that is on the line right now. Don't try me. Now, with that said, and yes, before the year came to an end, unfortunately, that needed to be said. Let's shift back into a tone appropriate for an end-of-the-year holiday season community podcast. Amy and I welcome Natalie back to the mic, and we chat with Dr. Robert Sedonio about von Willebrand disease, women with bleeding disorders, and the hemophilia pipeline moving into 2021. I hope you enjoy the show. I hope you share and subscribe to the Bloodstream podcast wherever you listen. Maybe even leave us a review. And once again, thank you for your loyal listenership. Here's to a healthy, happy, and hopeful 2021. Now on with the show. Season's greetings, listeners. This week on Bloodstream, Amy and I are joined by Atlanta-based pediatric hematologist and researcher for women with bleeding disorders, Dr. Robert Sedonio, to give us his 2020 blood disorders year in review.
And I'm always surprised when I run into a kid that's never been to a meeting and I just have a long conversation about him. You know, you can't just get an update once a year or once every 6 months from me. You need to hear it from other people too.
We'll also be joined by women's health advocate doula and expecting mama, our very own Natalie Lynch.
She's back from silence.
Woo-hoo!
And speaking of women's health and research, Bloodstream Media's got a new podcast dedicated to women with bleeding disorders and those who bleed on a cycle. Flow.
Finally, we get to talk about our menstrual cycles and extreme bleeding. We're so excited.
Yay! I don't relate as well, but I'm excited it's happening because it is important.
It's Kyle, so important.
I'm your host, Patrick James Lynch.
And I'm your other host, Amy Board.
Do make sure that you talk to medical professionals before making any healthcare decisions, because while we may be lovely podcasters, we are not doctors.
But we are passionate advocates committed to delivering the best podcast we can to the bleeding disorders community.
So thank you for listening, subscribe, and tell a friend. And hey, welcome to Bloodstream. Happy holidays, Bloodstream listeners. This episode goes live Christmas Day. So for all of you listening in real time, Merry Christmas. I obviously wore my best Christmas outfit, and I hope you're all enjoying a safe and sound holiday season.
And if you don't celebrate Christmas, happy Hanukkah, happy holidays. We're so excited that you're listening as well.
And we're excited to welcome Natalie back on for this inadvertent holiday episode. We didn't plan to release this on Christmas Day. It just happened to be a Friday.
It just happened to be a Friday. And I'm so curious to know how her silent meditation retreat was. She was there for 10 days.
Yes, 10-day Vipassana, which she hasn't even been back from for 24 hours. So this should be interesting. Let's get to that. But just before we do, I want to thank Takeda, the presenting sponsor of the Bloodstream podcast since 2016. Listeners, Takeda's got this website. You may have heard of it, bleedingdisorders.com. And that's where you can go to learn all about Takeda's commitment to and resources for the bleeding disorders community. Once again, that is bleedingdisorders.com. And for their ongoing support of the Bloodstream podcast, I would just like to say thanks, Takeda. All right. So, Amy, before we welcome Natalie on to hear all about the sounds of silence, allow me first to say hello, Amy. How are you?
Hello, Patrick. Right back at you. How are you? I am fine. I am great. I would just like to say, because it is the Christmas episode, I just want everyone to know that this year, for the first time, I have my very own stocking with my name on it, and my boyfriend, we have matching stockings. So A, I'm in like a fully like adult, full-blown relationship, and I am not using the stocking that I used as a child. Huge.
Wow.
It's a big deal.
A big moment. Congratulations. What does it look like? What's kind of the design?
It's adorable, and I should have brought it in here. I realized that this is like a flaw in the plan, but it's like, you know, I don't know. It's like knitted. It's adorable. It's got little like swirly Amy and Rob. It's super cute, and we're very excited about it.
That's nice.
We
got one for Russell. That's our new, Natalie and I got ours a couple few years ago, but we had to add Russell. So we've got his now hanging and baby, like the TBD baby one is also just hanging as well. So.
Oh, you do? You have a TB baby? It's just like there?
It's just like hanging out. Yeah. Just like whoever that baby is, this stocking has now been established.
Guys, that's super cute. I hope it doesn't change. Good. I hope you don't like have the baby and you're like, wow, the stocking does not fit with the personality of this child.
If that's the case, I actually have a lot of questions if that's the case.
I opened a can of worms, and it's probably not a thing.
I'm breaking silence to come in.
Welcome. Okay, well, welcome to the show.
So we this year we bought baby a stocking. There's no name on it because we don't know if we're having a boy or a girl, but I bought four of the same because I was like, what if they're discontinued? How many kids are we going to have? I want them to all have the same stocking. So I have four of them.
Oh, that's the cutest thing I've ever heard.
So I just wanted to say that. And I'm glad you and Rob have stockings.
Yeah, you know,
their names on them.
You know, it's happening.
I'm glad you shared that part because I was going to leave that part out, but that was yours to share. So, but you're here now. So I, Natalie, Russell and I picked you up yesterday from 10 days of not talking, not writing, not reading, not looking at people, meditating, walking, drinking tea, and sleeping until you had to wake up at 4 in the morning. So let's just start, I guess, broadly. How are you today?
I feel amazing. Vipassana is a life-changing experience. But it's intense to come back after no contact with the world, no sensory. It's a sensory deprivation experience, actually. Like sound, you realize like sound has vibration and voices and noise. And it's in the desert, too. So like even just there's not a lot of like ambient sound. Like it's crazy. But I feel great. I feel really, really good. And you know what I think is cool about Vipassana and this community that I was thinking particularly is it's a type of meditation, a theory of meditation that uses body sensations and pain in the body to connect to behavioral patterns and emotional pain. And by connecting the physical sensations with the deeply rooted behavioral patterns, you're able to like eradicate a lot of misery and a lot of, in some cases, a lot of physical pain as well. So it's a really cool technique. And you go so deeply into it because, yeah, like Patrick said, the bell wakes you up at 4 a.m. and that's when meditation starts. And you're basically meditating until 9 p.m. I mean, there are food breaks, there's tea breaks, there are opportunities to go walk around the grounds, but it is 10 days, and it's a full 10 days because you arrive on day 0 and you leave on day 11. So you're truly like in this silence, wow, in this meditation for 10 days. And it's incredible. I feel really fortunate to, this was my third experience, my third sit. And it's part of my life now. It's one of those things, once you taste the benefits of something and how it's changed your life and how it's changed, to me, it's changed my nervous system. I can't unknow and I can't unpractice this. And it's cool. It's a universal practice. So it's not really religious based. It can be practiced. It's non-sectarian. It's also donation based. So you can donate a dollar and you're fed and boarded and taught this beautiful technique for 10 days without anything expected in return. So it's incredible. It's really to help people. And I had such a good, I mean, I feel weird saying a good time because half the time you're there, you're like trapped in your mind and you're like, I'd really rather be anywhere else. But I had a good time.
So Amy, we signed you up for one that starts next week. Was there anything you wanted to ask Natalie about the experience?
OMG. OMG. I didn't know you couldn't read or write. I wouldn't be able to do it without reading and writing. I mean, writing, I think, is like the outward expression thing, just to like sit there without capturing some of those thoughts. I didn't realize that was a part of it. That would be a thing. But how was it being pregnant? I mean, this is first time being pregnant, and you're not newly pregnant. You're like adorably pregnant.
It was, I am 32 weeks pregnant, so there's
she looks adorable, everybody. She looks adorable.
It was cool. It was the least lonely experience because I was there with someone. I felt like I had like a person with me. And when I missed Patrick, I was like, oh, half of him is actually with me right now. And
that's my crying sound. People are listening to this and be like, what is that? Dying giraffe in the background.
It was really cool, and I, in deep meditation, feel like I had conversations with the baby. So the baby has revealed to me that she's a she. And the day that she's coming, which is January 28th. So we'll see if she's a liar and if she's not a she and if that's not when she comes. But in meditation, those things came to me. So I want to like be on the record so they don't happen. And I'm not later like, you know, I knew she was a girl and I knew she was coming today because she came to me in a vision. So I'd rather be like, oh, my vision was wrong than not state it.
Oh, I love that.
Was there anything in particular about the other women who were a part of this? I know you don't speak to anybody for most of the time, but then there's an opportunity, I think, at the end to kind of get to know who else is there.
So what was cool is because it was a COVID-safe operation, typically the center holds 4 times more people. So and typically it is segregated men and women, but they men and women come at the same time. So in the meditation hall, the men are on the left, the women are on the right, but then like the rest of the campus is completely segregated and you don't see the other gender except when you're in the hall meditating. But this time it was women only. So it was my first experience with women only. And I have to say, there's, even though you're not talking to anyone, there is this experience of when you're in the meditation hall with just women, the energy of it just being women was very different. And you don't know these people. So you haven't spoken to them. So you see their feet and you see their movements. So you create these stories in your head because your imagination is more alive and wild than it's ever been. About like who the person's on the cushion next to you, and in this case, you know, 6 feet away wearing a mask. But on the last day, you switch from noble silence to noble speech, and you get to kind of know these mystery people, and it's really, really beautiful. And I had the opportunity to sit in a circle, like a little Socratic circle, after with a group of women, and it was fascinating. But one of the really cool and like small world community things is I was having lunch after and a bunch of people were coming up to me being like, oh, my gosh, because I'm very visibly pregnant now, being like, how was this experience, this thing we all just went through together, 10 days? How was this pregnant? How was that for you? So I had the opportunity to talk to a lot of people. But the first person to come up to me and chat, we got into talking about our lives. And, you know, I was talking about Patrick a little bit and I was talking about hemophilia. And she runs a home infusion company here in Southern California. And it was like, there's 18 of us at a silent meditation retreat. Wow. And of course, there's another person from the community. So
unbelievable.
It was awesome. And it's hard. And it's a marathon. And like you said, Amy, you can't write or read. And in a way, what's cool about that is... like you really have to accept the like changing nature of things and non-attachment. So like if you had a great idea, you'll continue to have great ideas. Mm. And it's not being attached to that one thing that you have to write down. But of course your brain's like, oh my gosh, I have 400 things I need to Google because like I just thought of all this stuff that I've never thought about before. And it's just like releasing the attachment to those things. So it was great. It was, and obviously I'm really chatty now because I haven't talked for 10 days. So thanks for listening, guys.
Well, thanks for coming on to share some of it. Do you mind sticking around actually for the next segment for a few minutes talking about flow?
Sure. I love women's health. I'm excited about this podcast.
All right, great. Well, so thank you, Natalie, for sharing a little bit of like what that experience was. I think that's very interesting for our listeners. I also think people would be interested to see, as you mentioned, you're very visibly pregnant. We'll have to put something out through the Bloodstream Social, that one of the photos we took from yesterday, or you can just look at that for those of you watching on YouTube.
So cute.
But topic two. So flow, Amy, we're going to play the teaser trailer here in just a minute or two. But before we do that, can you just give us a little bit of context? What exactly is this podcast, Flow?
Sure. We're going to do a monthly show, and it's specifically for women with bleeding disorders and menstruating individuals who experience extreme bleeding, extreme cyclical bleeding, and also those looking for more access to menstruation health information. As we know, it is a tricky road to navigate, and it's very difficult to be taken seriously. It's also, it is like a natural thing. We all experience cyclical menstruation. And in some regard, it's hard to know what is normal and what isn't. So we're going to get into it, and we're very excited about it.
That's super important. So let's hear the teaser trailer, and then we'll come back and chat a little bit more about the latest show from Bloodstream Media, Flow.
We are pleased to invite you to Flow. If you menstruate, then this is the place for you.
Maybe you have a diagnosed bleeding disorder you are trying to navigate, or maybe you're searching for answers to your irregular menstrual bleeding.
Maybe you just like to talk about your period freely for once.
You need to be comfortable with the fact that the vagina menstruates.
So, what is menstruation?
Menstruation is a four-phase natural cycle of blood discharge. But our periods are more than that. They also impact our mind and our social interactions throughout our lives.
I'm PMSing!
The experience of menstruation can be isolating. What is normal? What is abnormal? What is disordered?
When is an extreme period part of the natural process? And when is it something that deserves consultation and support? Flow invites listeners to develop language to talk about their cycles, to get answers to what may feel unclear about menstruation.
It's my term for my time of the month.
Oh, yeah. What time of the month? The weekend?
Hi, my name's Jessica and I menstruate. I'll be hosting Flow with public health advocate and creator of the incredibly helpful program, How to Talk to Your Doctor. It's Christy Van Horn.
Thanks, Jessica.
My pleasure, Christy. Hey, what's our 2021 Flow like?
Once a month in 2021, we're gonna have our periods. And in each monthly episode, we're going to be joined by an expert. An OBGYN, hematologist, or other clinician, because each clinical point of view is different and unique to this experience, the experience of menstruation.
Also known as lunar calendar observation.
In each episode, we'll listen to a patient's story of remarkable cycle bleeding.
I skip a period once a year. Is that weird?
Is it normal to spot every day?
And our Flow team will respond to these shared experiences.
Menstruating is intimate, private, personal. Sharing the experience creates connection, community, and understanding.
In Flow, we aim to empower you.
With vocab to speak about and destigmatize menstruation.
To find a deeper self-knowledge and understanding of what it means to have a period.
With tools to navigate life with a bleeding disorder and to speak authentically with courage about your bleeding experience.
And to find more opportunities to understand your options when you're working with your healthcare provider.
Our goal is simple. We want to normalize the conversation around menstruating. We want to make it easier to ask and answer the question, hey, how's your flow?
Subscribe, rate, and share Flow. Referrals from you are the best way to reach new people. Share your story with us. Do you have an experience of extreme cyclical bleeding? We believe sharing these stories will support an increase in medical research and social acceptance.
So we want to know, how's your flow?
I'm really excited about flow. And I was just thinking, like, even being a someone who bleeds on a cycle for the last, oh my gosh, 25 years.
Well, not much of 2020, though. Not much of 2020.
But really just not, there is just not great education on what is quote unquote normal, mm-hmm. what is irregular, what is, how much bleeding is too much bleeding. And that, like, a lot of women's health in general is still behind a curtain and still like, ooh, we don't talk about those things. So to have such great personalities openly talk about this in an exciting podcast, I'm really, really excited.
And Natalie was actually a part of the committee that ideated this podcast as we were trying to figure out, you know, how we want to structure it. What's the goal? What are some of the things we could do? Nat was a part of all of that. And we're going to have the hosts who were also a part of that on the podcast here in January. So you're going to get to meet them. Jessica Richmond, who works with Believe Limited, and then Christy Van Horn, who is a public health advocate. She's actually been on the podcast a lot. She used to work for the National Hemophilia Foundation. So she has been well-versed in our community. But we're excited. And Natalie's right. That actually, it segues perfectly into the first three episodes. We're actually breaking and dissecting what is normal, what is abnormal, and what is disordered. And there's actually differences between abnormal and disordered. We're speaking with experts. That's another thing we learned. You know, in the bleeding disorder community, we kind of think, you know, hematology and of course the OBGYN is there, but sometimes it isn't. You know, a lot of HGCs don't hold women's clinics. And so there isn't an OBGYN that is well-versed in disordered bleeding, von Willebrand's disease or platelet dysfunction. But it's also so hard to diagnose that it's hard to kind of figure out, like, when should you see who? And there should be multiple people on the team. So we have a great OBGYN for the first two, and then we have a hematologist, Dr. Paula James. She's with the Quebec
Fantastic.
HTC, and her interview, it's going to be in March. I'm sorry, we have to wait until March to hear Dr. James, but she will be a part of the podcast, I think, going forward in really meaningful ways. So we're excited for you guys to hear it, and we'll get Jess and Christy on in January to do a deep dive. But yeah,
and if stuff comes up on that show too that you would like to hear us speak about more here on Bloodstream with those guests, let us know. mailbag@bloodstreammedia.com. you know the drill on social, we're all over. Let Amy or Natalie me know if you want, find one of us. And if you're like, hey, I'd love to hear Dr. James or Christy speak more about this thing, Flow's a monthly show. Bloodstream here is weekly, and we can always expand on stuff that comes up through Flow here on Bloodstream if you, dear listener, would like to hear it. So let us know. Mailbag.
And also your questions.
Yes.
We, you know, the majority of the show is based on listener questions, and we actually had so much response of women just asking questions about their cycles, and the questions were fascinating. It's like, oh yeah, we don't ever talk about this. And it's tremendous. So if you have a flow question, and honestly, from any walk of life, if you have a flow question, whether you haven't bled for a while because you're on hormone therapy, whether you have you're struggling with it, whether you're afraid about getting off hormone therapy, thinking about pregnancy, please ask us, and we will get those questions answered.
Also, what a great podcast for people who don't bleed on a cycle too, people who are men and have partners who bleed on cycles, because just knowing what is normal, what isn't normal, and maybe even how to be a good partner to someone with abnormal or disordered bleeding
100%.
At certain times of the month or certain times of the year.
Yeah, I'm glad you said that. I was actually thinking similar when we were off mic talking a little bit about flow and like the language for it and some of the nuances, and just thinking like how valuable it is as a gentleman to be listening to and learning from. And I certainly plan to listen to flow as someone who wants to learn, like, yes, as a producer here, but also I want in on these conversations, guy. I want to hear what y'all are talking about. So I will be listening to Flow, and I hope you will as well. You can subscribe to it right now. It's on all the places. If you look up Flow Bloodstream or Flow Experience, there's other podcasts that use the word flow, so you gotta get a little bit nuanced, or follow links in the program notes, probably the easiest way. And Amy, thank you for breaking that down for us. We actually, that's a perfect segue as well into speaking about women's bleeding and how hard it can be to diagnose. Dr. Robert Sedonio, yes, a fellow gentleman, a fellow long-haired gentleman, as we discussed last week. He is also one of the leading researchers and, frankly, advocates for women with bleeding disorders. He runs a clinic out of Atlanta specific for women and girls who bleed. And he joins Amy and I right now. So Amy and I are joined now by pediatric hematologist, Dr. Robert Sedonio. Hi, Dr. Sedonio. Good afternoon for both of us now. And how are you doing?
I'm doing great. It's sunny outside, as you can see all the sunlight pouring in my basement window here. So yes, I'm doing great.
And it's lighting very well your seasonally appropriate sweater, which, just for starters, well done. You've got a lot more spirit going right now than Amy or I do.
100%.
Yes, we're going to the botanical gardens tonight to go look at the lights, try to get in the Christmas spirit, and we got to pick a few Christmas movies to watch, so we're trying to figure out which one to watch next. I think Home Alone is next on the docket.
Nice.
So.
Nice. A disappointment.
Yes.
Never a disappointment. I also should mention, you know, I generally feel smarter when we talk about stuff, whether on the podcast or at a meeting or offline. But recently, I found myself being like, oh, Dr. Sedonio, we were in Arizona for a shoot, and I kept talking about being in Sedonia, Arizona. And I had, Sedona, I'm in Sedona. Sedonio is a doctor I know. Yeah. That happened probably a half a dozen times. So it was the first time I felt a little less smart for knowing you, and actually quite a bit dumber.
Yeah.
But that was really more says more about me than you. I just wanted to share that.
Yes, it's a nice place. Yes. So yeah, it's okay. So
it is. It's true. And it's beautiful no matter what you call it, I found. Yeah. So thankful for that. Amy and I just finished chatting a bit about women with bleeding disorders. We have a new podcast dedicated to women called Flow. And obviously that's a research area of focus and an area of focus for you in general. So we definitely want to touch on that. Just quickly, I was looking at a breakdown, and I've actually seen lists from you and presentations you've given that are like this. But I found some list online of all hemophilia A, B, licensed, study, preclinical, phase 3, everything. And I believe that list had 50 drugs on it.
Yes.
50 drugs, 50, which is a ton. So I suppose, to put a fine point on it, going into 2021, what of all of this data, what of all of these options and all of these timelines should we be paying most attention to?
You know, it's funny, when you write those papers, they instantly become like outdated, because there's probably two more drugs that just got just move down the pipeline. And so that's always the funny thing. When you write those papers, you're like, man, it's already outdated because it took about 2 months to get it published. So there's a number of drugs, and we try to focus on phase 2 and 3, because there's lots of drugs that don't make it past phase 1 and 2. They just don't, for a number of reasons, a number of good reasons. You know, they don't look promising. They don't seem like they're going to do the right thing, or they just aren't safe. And so that's really good, because that's why we have the way that we do the trials. And so we always tell people to focus on those phase 3 trials, because those are the ones where it becomes real and very likely. And like you said, I mean, you know, with emicizumab coming, there's multiple companies trying to come up with similar types of factoring.
Concizumab?
Sorry,
with concizumab coming?
No, with emicizumab, you know, with that drug on the market, there's a number of companies that are looking at this. Novo Nordisk has one. I think it's called Mimate. It looks like Mimate, but I think they want to call it Mimate for some reason. And, that actually is undergoing trials as well. And so you see people sort of shifting and making decisions. But, you know, that's why it's really important to go to these meetings. You know, that's part of our job, is to educate patients where the trials are. If we see concerns, you know, we write editorials, there's a number of people on medical Twitter. Dr. Macris, who's tweets a lot, you know, he's like the oldest guy I know that tweets that much.
Right.
He just does a lot of tweeting and puts on great content online.
Yeah. Yes.
What is it about older guys and tweeting? They just, that's their medium, I guess. I don't know why, but it is. And so, yeah, so I think it's really going to the meetings. And this is the reason to stay updated on these meetings. You know, and I ask the teenage kids that I see in clinic, and I'm always surprised when I run into a kid that's never been to a meeting, and I just have a long conversation about him. You know, he really should participate in this and understand this you can't just get an update once a year or once every 6 months for me. You need to hear it from other people too.
Right.
And so I think that's important. The reason to have all these, continue to have meetings online, even though sometimes we've grown a little bit tired of some of the Zoom meetings,
sure.
It's still important for us to stay engaged in this. We're hoping next year there'll be a lot of interesting studies, and it's not just, you know, therapeutic products. You know, Vioxx is being repackaged. There's going to be a trial next year,
right,
targeting hemophilia patients used for non-opiate pain medicines, and a number of other gene therapy studies that are going to be open next year. So we're hopeful for next year. We're hopeful that the, you know, COVID gets under control so we can enroll patients, because that's been a really big problem. Enrollment in studies has been devastated for us for the last six months for obvious reasons. And, you know, it's important, but science can't take too long of a break.
Right. You know, Dr. Sidonio, there's so much buzz about hemophilia and pipelines and treatments and all this stuff. And as I sit here from my vantage point, I keep thinking, what about von Willebrand's patients? You know, you don't hear anything. What's the deal with pipelines? What's the deal with research? What, you know, I, not just women, but people in general with von Willebrand's, what's been the highlights, maybe lowlights of the year? Is anything going on? Share a little bit of your thoughts about von Willebrand's disease.
Yeah, I mean, not enough is going on for von Willebrand's. I think what's going to really help are the von Willebrand guidelines. So, you know, ISTH, ASH, WFH, the NHF, a bunch of 3- and 4-letter organizations got together and say, we're going to sponsor the von Willebrand guidelines. We're going to bring in international people. And the exciting thing is they actually brought patients as well. Patients were part of the decision making. They got equal vote with physicians. And the guidelines are essentially done. They had the comment period early in the year. And so for those of you who read the 200 something page documents and analyzed it and gave comments, we're very grateful for that. And so the guidelines are essentially completed. There really probably aren't going to be any significant changes. I think that's going to be helpful for sure. You know, there was the WFH meeting and Peter Lenting, from Europe gave a nice talk, and he showed all the progress on the left side of the hemophilia products, you know, recombinant products in the 90s, you know, now we have mimetics, bypassing agents. And then you looked like after desmopressin, there was like a 20-year gap where nothing happened for von Willebrand's. And then the first recombinant von Willebrand factor concentrate came out, and then nothing after that. And so I think that was a nice highlight. I think the guidelines are really gonna sort of help refocus, you know, the groups, the pharmaceutical companies to really start focusing on von Willebrand's as well. And so I think they heard that at WFH. They heard that at the, you know, the global summit that WFH held, the first women's summit. You know, it's not just von Willebrand's, but von Willebrand's is a big part of that. And there are a number of groups like VWD Connect and other groups that are trying to mobilize and get some more attention on this. But I think when the guidelines are discussed fully in January and February, I think that's gonna be like a full media push to really focus on von Willebrand's, because there really aren't products in the pipeline for them. There just aren't. Yeah. I mean, I went back and looked to see if there's anything that I missed that I just didn't know about, but there's no significant gene therapy progress on that. You know, there are some trials ongoing. You know, Octapharma has a prophylaxis study ongoing. You know, Takeda has their von Willebrand prophylaxis study going on. Myself and Dr. Angela Wyand from Michigan are running a severe von Willebrand study, you know, through the American Thrombosis and Hemostasis Network. We're actually halfway enrolled. We actually enrolled ahead of schedule, which I really think people were surprised about that we were able to do this during a pandemic, but I wasn't surprised, because one of the sort of carrots on the study was that we offered free genetic testing. And so everybody was, you know, that's a group that has not been able to get genetic testing because insurance rarely covers it. It's quite expensive. It's difficult to do. And we were able to enroll very quickly. And I think it has a lot to do with that. We didn't offer anything else, no money, no gift cards. No chance to win any iPads or anything like that. So it's just like, please sign up. I don't have any money to give you. Just sign up, please. Let us get share your data. And so I think that's going to be helpful for next year, because we really think we'll be enrolled by the end of summer in 2021. And we're really trying really hard to resurrect the Von Willebrand Prophylaxis Network that Dr. Tom Abshire and Dr. Berntorp are running. And so we're really excited trying to get that going. Some of us younger guys, they referred us to as young, but we think younger is maybe more appropriate. So, so those guys are close to retirement. And so we think this is sort of passing the torch on to some of us in our mid-careers to try to really try to bring this idea about prophylaxis to the United States. You know, bring that whole culture of prophylaxis that hemophilia totally is comfortable with, but Von Willebrand patients are just not as comfortable with.
Interesting. Do you see that Von Willebrand's, even though it might not be considered an ultra rare disease, like almost in that same vein of patients need to mobilize with these organizations to push researchers to dive in? Is that kind of where you're seeing the gap?
Yeah, I think that's going to help. I think the guidelines are going to help. I think that's going to get people really excited. And particularly important part of the guidelines is they're going to have some little bit more clarity on the diagnosis. Mm-hmm. And so I was, you know, joking with my one of my colleagues, one of my trainees, I'm trying to get them interested in bleeding disorders. And I was like, no offense to hemophilia. I was like, but anybody can diagnose hemophilia. It's real simple. You send the test and it's pretty straightforward. Whether you make the right diagnosis and in carriers, that's different. But in a male with hemophilia, it's pretty easy. Von Willebrand's takes effort, takes real, it's a lot more sophistication behind it because there are a lot of tests. You know, stress plays a big role in this, iron deficiency, all these things. And so you have to really understand the testing. You really have to sort of listen. You really have to figure out what's enough therapy, what's not too much. And so that's it does take a lot more sophistication to diagnose and manage a Von Willebrand patient. And I think that's something that we just have to acknowledge that it is more difficult. Mm-hmm. And for you were saying about the rare, you know, if you take the severe Von Willebrands, they definitely are rare. Those 100%. Are pretty rare. There's only, you know, 300-400 maybe in the United States of severe Von Willebrands. And that's in our entire United States. And so it's going to take working with other countries. And so we're trying to work with our colleagues in Ireland, some of our, you know, Nordic colleagues as well, to, you know, because that's the only way it's going to get done is in our Canadian colleagues who are done a really great job in Von Willebrand's research.
Yeah, one more question for me, and thank you so much for your time today too, sure, Dr. Sidonia. I really appreciate it. When thinking about representation, I know from women who I've spoken to, from people of color, from people who would identify as non-gender conformist, that some of the ways trials are constructed and the data that ultimately gets used to approve a drug or not, but in this case, approve a drug, it can come to market.
Yeah.
And it's in theory something that I can take, but has never actually been tested in someone like me. Mm-hmm. So that's obviously, that's overall research, clinical trials. That's a thing we got to pay attention to. But within our orb, is there anything with relation to women with bleeding disorders, with people of color for whom there's some different trends that can sometimes be analyzed to indicate this, maybe that, we're not sure. Is there anything that I guess patients and families can be thinking about or chapter leaders can do to help push the inclusivity of the research in our community?
Yeah, and I think the companies are actually, you know, I think, I can't remember which meeting is, they all kind of just run together, but I was part of a panel that was sort of talking about this. And I was worried, I was like, I'm not sure what we're gonna talk about for the entire time, but then it became a really interesting, engaging topic and we wish we had more time to talk about it. But after that meeting, a number of companies actually reached out and wanted to talk about this issue. And so I think that's a way that like, that was a topic of discussion from, it was either NHF or WFH, hopefully they don't get mad. I don't remember which one it was, I think it was NHF. But they wanted to bring that up. And that led to companies saying, we didn't know this was an issue. Can you talk to us about this so we can sort of start thinking about this internally and start, you know, having subcommittees and to discuss that. So if you look at some newer studies, a number of them, Like, for example, Haven 6, which is sponsored by Genentech, is looking at emicizumab in mild and moderate hemophilia. And a number of us told them it shouldn't matter if it's male or female. And they actually listened to that, and they actually didn't make that an exclusion. It does get complicated with women on studies because of things like birth control pills, you know, breastfeeding, pregnancy prevention. Those are really important that you have, having somebody get pregnant on a trial is a big deal because you don't know what the effect of that drug is on the fetus. And so, sure. But that's something that, you know, is easily managed and just has some restrictions on. And so that actually is part of their trial. And so I think companies are starting to listen to this. We've told them that if you're, particularly if you're doing non-severe hemophilia, which is, you know, much more common in the women with hemophilia community than severe, right. Of course, but that's a lot more rare, that they would include them. And I know of many patients that either have Turner syndrome and only have one X chromosome and have severe hemophilia, or are lionized and have really low expression, that are on, you know, for example, emicizumab, or they're on factor prophylaxis. And so I think they're trying to include some of those patients in studies. Some of this comes from the government. And so I've been on some of these committees where we've tried to loosen up the criteria, and the government wants it a little bit more narrow. So it's more analyzable. So it isn't always the companies that do that. For example, on this most recent von Willebrand study, we wanted to have it for younger kids. Mm-hmm. And they said, well, you don't have enough data on kinetics in kids under 6. So you can't ask to enroll those patients. And so, you know, the company and I were really disappointed on that, because we really wanted to target younger kids, because that's who really starts prophylaxis in von Willebrand.
Do you have an opportunity, just to take that example, do you have an opportunity in those instances to push back a little bit as company, as expert scientists and research and hematologists, you do?
Yeah, I mean, they do listen when it comes to this, and they've opened it up for some studies. And you know, I think in the surveillance projects like Athen and the CDC, that's something that they actually have noticed, you know, 4 or 5 years ago when we had committee meetings, that we don't feel like we're getting as good representation from the Hispanic, African-American community. It's underrepresented. And so they've tried and attempted to sort of rectify this, because, you know, when we look at those large scale data, we're making large inferences on what happens, and we want to make sure that it happens. And here's a difference. And some people say, well, who cares if you're black or white and you have hemophilia, you're going to respond the same. But here's a perfect example. In von Willebrand's, one of the tests called the risdiceton cofactor assay actually measures differently in a large number of African-American patients. It actually measures falsely lower. And they have a difference in their DNA. It's not a mutation. It's just what they call a SNP, which just means a normal variation. But they don't respond to that specific reagent very well. And it disproportionately affects Hispanic and African-American patients. We wondered about this for a while we had patients with lower levels, but they said they weren't bleeding. And then Dr. Flood from Wisconsin published a nice study showing that that actually existed, this mutation or this variant. It wasn't really a mutation. And it's something that acknowledged, and then we had to create a new assay to get past that. And so we see this very commonly. And so that's just one example. And so it is a real thing, and it should be something that we pay more attention to. Hopefully moving forward, we do that.
Wow, I'm glad I asked. That's really interesting. Thank you for your time today and all the work you do. And anytime we've reached out to you for help with something, you're always really generous. And you make this stuff easier to understand and ask questions about. You throw jokes in there. And as Amy has pointed out, you're a fellow long-haired guy. So I got mine back at the moment, but let it fool you not. We are long-haired brethren.
I took a little bit off in 2020, but it's all coming back. I'm going to bring it back for 2021.
Okay, good. I was a little nervous when I saw it was a bit shorter. I'm glad to know it's coming back. Thanks for everything, Dr. Sedonio, and have a great end of your 2020 and a great start to 2021.
Yeah. All pitching for a great 2021. 2020 is behind us.
Thank you, Dr. Sedonio, for joining us and helping us understand our community's state of the union, as it were, as we bid farewell to this weirdo year and usher in, God willing, a much brighter 2021.
Next week, Patrick and I will be kicking off the new year with the community advocate and health equity champion, Alexa Abreu, who joins us to talk about the important role of diversity and inclusion in the healthcare space, the workplace, and everywhere, quite frankly. So make sure you're subscribed to the Bloodstream podcast on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you listen to those podcasts to get that episode as soon as it goes live on New Year's Day. All of our, like, we're dropping on holidays.
We are just about that life right now. Thank you, Amy, for that. Thank you again, Robert Sedonio, Dr. Robert Sedonio, for joining. Thank you all out there for listening. Thanks to CADA for being the presenting sponsor of the Bloodstream podcast, bleedingdisorders.com, to learn more. Also, thanks to CADA for being the supporter of Flow, the latest from Bloodstream Media. And with that, that is all for this episode. Do you have a bleeding disorders question or a health topic you'd like to hear us discuss more? Is there an expert or a guest that you are just dying to hear from? Do you want to inquire about casting opportunities for Bloodstream's narrative and docu-styled podcast series to get your story amplified through Bloodstream Media? Well, let us know. Email us, mailbag@bloodstreammedia.com, or connect with Bloodstream Media on social media. You'll find Bloodstream Media on Facebook, on Instagram, and Twitter. Or you can follow Amy Board, Natalie Lynch, or Patrick James Lynch on Facebook, on Twitter, Instagram, or LinkedIn. Shout out to all the committed LinkedIn users out there. Check out the program notes. You'll get used to it, Bordeaux, for this episode in your podcast player or on bloodstreammedia.com, where you will find links and information related to the stories and segments featured on this episode. I am your host, Patrick James Lynch.
And I am your other host, Amy Board.
And I am your sometimes host, Natalie Lynch.
So season's greetings, Merry Christmas, Happy Hanukkah, Happy Holidays, and until next year, take self-care of yourself. Bye, everybody.
See you next year.